Vasudevaya. We continue with the chapter. Pandavas retire timely. First canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 15th chapter, text 28. Please kindly repeat responsibly. Sutta vacha evam chintayato jishno krishna pada saroham sauhardena tigadhena santa siddhimalamati. Sutta Vacha. Sutta Goswami said, evam das chintayata, while thinking of the instructions, jishno, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna Pada, the feet of Krishna, Sarovaram, resembling lotuses. Sauhardena, by deep friendship. Atigadena, in great intimacy. Shanta, pacified. Asit, it so became. Vimala, without any tinge of material contamination. Mati, mind. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace is Confounder Acharya A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shapurmaki. Sutta Goswami said, thus, being deeply absorbed in thinking of the instructions of the Lord, which were imparted in the great intimacy of friendship, and in thinking of his lotus feet, Arjuna's mind became pacified and free from all material contamination. Kindly repeat responsibly. Sutta Goswami said, thus being deeply absorbed in thinking of the instructions of the Lord, which were imparted in the great intimacy of friendship, and in thinking of his lotus feet, Arjuna's mind became pacified and free from all material contamination. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Since the Lord is absolute, deep meditation upon Him is as good as yogic trance. The Lord is no different from His name, form, quality, pastimes, entourage, and specific actions. Arjuna began to think of the Lord's instructions to him on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Only those instructions began to eliminate the tinges of material contamination in the mind of Arjuna. The Lord is like the sun. The sun's appearance means immediate dissipation of darkness or ignorance, and the Lord's appearance within the mind of the devotee can at once drive away the miserable material effects. Lord Chaitanya has therefore recommended constant chanting of the name of the Lord, the protection from all contamination of the material world. The feeling of separation from the Lord is undoubtedly painful to the devotee, but because it is in connection with the Lord, it has a specific transcendental effect which pacifies the heart. Feelings of separation are also sources of transcendental bliss, and they are never comparable to contaminated material feelings of separation. Om Aginati Mirandasya Aginanjana Shakaya Chakshuramitamena Tasmehi Shigurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mahavishnu Sthapitamena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaya Dati Swam Bhavantika. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu So education is supposed to be knowledge is power, right? Education is supposed to be providing guidance out of these problems. Now we have so many universities all over the world. We have so many schools, and perhaps the schools and the universities are increasing with each and every day all over the world, because that's the program of all governments. Make more schools, make more universities, educate the people, bring them in, give them knowledge. But there is something very interesting that we can observe. There is a paradox, there is a dichotomy, there is a contradiction that every intelligent person will notice in this world. That although there is so much more educational institutions in the world which are meant to resolve the problems of the world, the problems of the world are increasing. How do we understand that? That means that there is something wrong with modern education. If the problems are increasing, for example, we are now at the stage where we have a democratic society, and supposedly the problems of the past have been transcended, such as slavery, poverty, and ultimately peace of mind, longevity. We can see that it is not really like that. In the past we had organized forceful slavery of people. In the modern day we have a very clever form of slavery, which is basically inspiring people to become slaves. And slave of one economic system that is actually anti-economic, because it destroys all the material resources and the future of the planet. So people are willingly becoming part of this slavery system. In the past, the slaves had to be forced to become slaves, right? Do you agree with me? Yes? But nowadays, we go and we say, I want to become a slave, can I become a slave? But we don't say it like that, but actually that's what it means. You get a house with a bond from the bank, and it's called mortgage. Mortgage means, you know what it means? Some people are laughing already. Mort is a Latin word and it means mortale, death. Mortgage, it means to be bound to death. My own sister is in the US, and she's got a family, and they bought a house a couple of years ago. So I asked her, how are you doing with the bond? She said, probably when I die, my son will continue to fail. That's freedom, huh? Welcome to the free world. So, it's a very sophisticated form of slavery that goes on. In the past, I observed in my own country, I come from Europe, from Bulgaria, very humble, simple country, people are very poor there. And the transition from communism to free market economy, capitalism, democracy, you know, has done so much damage to the country that recently I saw some statistics about 180 villages practically abandoned. Between 9 and 11 people are living there in a village, and the government is taking them off the map because it's no longer a village, it's like just some kind of a community or something, you know. And people are just leaving the country because it's very poor. They are looking to become slaves somewhere in the West, you know. And then their real wealth, the land, the home that they have, they just abandon. They have a house, even double-story houses. And they abandoned them to go to work in the West. Now, I live in Africa now, in South Africa. If you go to the township, people suffer due to having no proper accommodation. We've been serving one township in a place called Nyanga, and there is, people live in a very, very austere conditions. You probably have seen in India, if you have gone, there is a lot of township like that. People just put up some metal boxes and some cardboards, and they just make something that look like a house. It's due to urbanization. So people leave the village. They also had land in the village, and they go to the city to look for a job, but they get stuck. There is no jobs, so then they live in these austere conditions. It's all over the world, this problem of people thinking, let's go to the city, let's move to another country, and I'll become free, I'll become happy. But the result is that there is actually we become enslaved by some kind of very negative situations. So this is all over the world. It's a phenomenon. It's due to misperceived idea of what is wealth. Today people think that wealth is currency, it's paper. But to get that paper, we have to destroy the ecology. According to one professor from Cornell University, there are three types of economy. Four types of economy, sorry. It's the natural economy, the resources of this world, everything that we have, like the water, the fruits, the trees, the land, the soil, the sea, all these different resources, natural resources. It's called natural economy. Then you have traditional economy, which is people living off the land, you know, producing their own livelihood through farming. Then you have mixed economy, where people do some farming, but also they earn some money somehow, and then they use both their produce as well as what is on the market they can purchase with cash. And then there is the money economy, where there is no involvement in managing the land. It's only just working for cash. Now, this economic system at the moment, I said earlier on, is anti-economic because it destroys the very source of economy, the natural resources. If you just look at some statistics, documentaries or something like that, you'll see the damage done to Mother Earth. And if we continue with such excessive consumption, because you can run this economy only if the people consume extreme amount of if there is an extreme amount of consumption, then the economy can actually function. So this modern economy is actually destroying the real resources, like the fish in the ocean is depleting because every day, you know, they take for market purposes, selling fish on the market. Tons and tons, billions of fish is going on the market all over the world. We are killing many animals, you know, like cows and sheep. Some Australia and New Zealand, one of the biggest exporters of that. This industry is the most polluting industry to the environment, the meat-eating industry. Because the factories, first of all, they use a lot of water and they cause so much damage to the water depleting resources that are there. I heard that we can't even water our garden here at the temple. That's why the grass has disappeared there. But actually, all this water is going into the farm factories for killing animals. And this is one of the biggest wastes of water. So, mismanagement. You know. So gradually, this kind of course that we have taken as a civilization, Maharaj spoke yesterday, some people feel if we change, we can make some adjustment, but some other people feel there is no hope, but they don't want to say it because they don't want to discourage the people. Just kind of leave them, we'll see what's going to happen. Maharaj said that yesterday. So, you know, if we have real education, this would have been there. In fact, we have misconception of what education is. We're learning how to read, but we're reading how to exploit others. You know, a lot of economists all over the world, they study the American model of economy, but which is just how to exploit the masses, like the consumerism. Now the economists in the US, they try to think what will excite the consumer to buy more, right? That's all the technology of running the economy. And then to buy more, you have to produce more, and to produce more, it's something unnecessary, and then what is unnecessary, you have to take from the earth and destroy the resources that are there. So this is not really even materialistic. Maharaj was saying yesterday, if you tell someone you are a materialist in modern society, it's like you're giving them a compliment. Actually, according to Bhagavad Gita, this is called vikarma. It means ugra karma. It means activity meant to destroy the world. It's very interesting, huh? So, and then supposedly, okay, let's look at the people that have achieved some wealth and status in the world. Are they really peaceful and happy with that wealth and status? We see that the wealthiest people go to psychologists, psychiatrists. They have problems. So if wealth was supposed to make you happy and peaceful, and if it was supposed to give you this good experience of life, then why are you going to psychologists and psychiatrists? Is it true? Yeah. So that means there is a pinprick in the educational system of society. And it is our duty to become qualified to inspire the educators of this world to become more genuinely spiritually minded, Krishna conscious. So I will conclude this section by saying that we look at how modern society is, although looking at education and trying to increase the education in the world, we have a lot of problems. And economic problems are there, health problems are increasing, environmental problems are increasing, interpersonal relationship problems are increasing, people are not willing to marry anymore to create a family, or if they marry, they get divorced very quickly. So this is going on in the world. So it's constant strife, fighting, constant wars somewhere in the world. In fact, the 20th century is considered one of the most violent centuries in whole human history. You know, so many wars have been fought in just 20th century, you know, the First World War, Second World War, and then the Vietnam War, and so many other different wars, Afghanistan War, and Iraq War, and this war and that war, and it's constantly wars. You know. Then Bosnia and Yugoslavia, Herzegovina, so many things, and just one after another. So now the world is looking at one world, one nation. These concepts are there, will become one, and then everything will be fine. But we are seeing that even when people are one, in a sense, they now get equal opportunities in democracy. They are provided equal opportunities in the slavery system. You know, so even if that is there, they still competition, strife, and friends and enemies? Is the polarity still there of I like this person and I hate that person? So that means the education cannot really provide solution to the problem of peace. Because even if people work together in the same company, I'm sure some of you are working here or have been working, you know what kind of competition is there, what kind of dog-eat-dog culture is there. And basically, you're forced to do things that you don't want to do just to keep your position in the company, and you have to put the other people down so you can get ahead and so on and so forth. So there is so much of that going on. So even if we talk about peace in a business on a corporate level, you can see that there is no such thing. And in fact, there is competition, and in fact there is also war, economic war, between one corporation and another. They try to kill each other. Who's going to get the market? In the US, I heard about 1,000 businesses. For 1,000 businesses that open a year, by the end of the year, 950 are closed. And then in the 5 years, only 4 or 5 are left of the 50 due to competition. So everything is like, you know, fight, fight, fight. You have to compete, compete, compete. So if competition is being taught to be the goal to success, even on a material level, how can you be happy and peaceful if you have to constantly compete with someone? Is that real education? Do you understand what I'm trying to say? So this is actually the dominant culture in the world, and we see how, despite the increased universities and schools all over the world, we are not getting free from our problems. In fact, we are increasing the problems with each and every day. And on top of everything, everyone is in debt. Even the whole country is in debt. I don't know how Australia is doing, but the US are $300 trillion in debt to the Federal Reserve Bank. And one statistic was showing $80,000 per household they're in debt to the Federal Reserve Bank. But of course they can't afford to pay it, so the country is in constant debt. Is that the model for success we're looking at in this modern world? India is looking at the US. Everyone is looking. And even when they're failing, we're still looking at them because they have created this artificial sense of progress. All these big skyscrapers and all this big facade of success. But actually that is all based on borrowing money from banks. It's not real. When I was living in the communist countries, they were, you know, saying, don't watch American movies, don't hear American music, you'll become contaminated because of the you know, capitalistic system is exploitation, there is no equality. They were saying in India also like that? Yeah? Yeah. No, not really. And they were not allowing us. And then, but some, you know, some information will always sneak in, some movie or this or that, and you'll see how these flashy buildings and these fast cars and, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme is fighting or something. And then you think, wow, this is the world to be in, you know. I'm just stuck in this stupid communist country, you know. You know, so everyone was thinking, you know, this is it. And now the communism has failed. And now we are seeing that these guys are actually in debt. It's not real. It's all taking money from the banks. It was just an artificial kind of presentation so that through that they could redirect society in the direction they want to go in terms of they knew the weakness of people. They want to live lavish life. They want to feel like kings. You know, we've got these big shopping malls now. If you go in a shopping mall, it's like a palace. In Cape Town we've got this sanctuary city, it's like a palace. When you go inside you feel like a king or a queen or something like that. But the idea is to make you spend all your money inside them, you know. So the slave masters are becoming more and more clever how to capture the innocent person and to keep him busy in this material world. But the slave masters are, of course, simply servants of our own karma, according to Krishna. And they are just empowered for destruction because that is our karma. So as an individual or collective consciousness, we are calling for this kind of destructive leadership in the world, individually and collectively. Because our consciousness is such, then the material energy provides such leadership in the world that is just destructive. So now, spiritual education is something different. Spiritual education means that if we change our consciousness, then automatically there will be a whole transformation of the world and the leadership will be forced to change. Not only the persons, that is not the most important thing. The change will happen in the consciousness. Maybe the same leaders can change and become devotees. Like the example of Srinivasa Acharya, when they were carrying the books of the Siddha Goswamis, so they fell asleep at night, and this king, Vira, what was his name? Vira? Virambir, yeah. Virambir stole the books of the Siddha Goswamis. And then when Srinivasa Acharya went into the kingdom, he spoke so beautifully of the Bhagavatam that he changed the consciousness of the king and he became a Vaishnava. The same person, they didn't have to do coup de cap and overthrow him. Same person became Vaishnava and he facilitated devotional culture throughout the whole kingdom. So it is depending on our consciousness. And these books that we have, they can transform us. They can become the power of knowledge is there that can transform one's consciousness from materialistic to spiritual, or even from self-destructive to devotional consciousness. So here Krishna was remembered by Arjuna. And that remembrance of Arjuna brought purity of mind, peace and freedom from all material contamination. All the illusions were driven away. Now, why is this so? Why remembering Krishna or being mindful of Krishna can create such a transformation in somebody's heart? Because Krishna is the embodiment of devotion and love. Krishna means God. Krishna means the source of everything, the Supreme Person, the original mother father of all living entities. Darwin was saying that everything originates by chance through natural selection. We have this great variety of species, and then gradually through evolution, through some nebulous force which they cannot pinpoint what it is. They say there is evolution, some force, mystical force pushes the species to change from monkey to human or whatever. So Darwin was saying my grandfather is monkey, but Prabhupada was saying my father and my grandfather is Krishna, is the original person. So Prabhupada was very simply explaining that the source of everything must be a person. Because, now this is a very philosophical explanation which I heard from Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, which can help us understand reality as it is. He said, if the source is not a person, that means that the source will be less than the creation. Because in this creation there is personality, we have all personality. Now if the source of everything is lacking personality, that means that the source is lacking something that is existing in the creation. This is an imperfect definition of the source, because the source cannot lack anything that is visible in its creation. Do you understand that? The source cannot lack anything that is visible in the creation. Therefore, the source must be a person, because there is persons in this world. So he said, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj said, the source of everything is he, she and it, simultaneously. This is very interesting. Usually, some people think that the source is it. Sometimes people think the source is he, and sometimes some feminist ladies, they think the source is she. Yeah, I've met a lot of them. God is a female and all that. But actually, God or the source, to be the source, must be everything, he, she and it. What does this mean? He means Krishna, she means Radharani, and it means impersonal Brahman. You understand? It's one, Om, Om Tat Sat, the Supreme Whole. So now, Krishna is the embodiment of devotion. By studying Shastra, we can understand that this world is created for a purpose by the Supreme Devotional Entity, the Lord of Love, Krishna, and it is created because we have decided to become antagonistic towards God, all of us in this world. So this world is created because of our desire to be antagonistic. So Krishna doesn't want this world to exist because he knows that we're going to suffer a lot, disease, old age, death, reincarnation, wars, famine, so much disturbance is there, slavery, what not. He knew that we were going to suffer like that in this material world. So he didn't want it. But because we were so adamant, we want, then he facilitated this world. Now, when Krishna facilitated this world is created by the material energy. In fact, we're all covered by matter. Even our body is matter. Although matter is dead, there is no life in matter. If you examine all the chemicals, oxygen, carbon, nitrogen, hydrogen, there is no life in these chemicals, then it is bewildering. How can in this table there is no life? The same chemical elements are there, but in this body with the same chemical elements, there is consciousness. It's very amazing. So, the it aspect of God is this Brahmanda, this material universe. So for the envious, he is it, or God is it. Because we're envious, we're antagonistic, therefore he is hidden himself away from us by covering us with matter. Because we want to be covered by matter. You know, we want to be independent from him. And the only way you can be independent from him if you merge into his Bahirangi Shakti, external energy, which means matter. You see, it's our own desire. Krishna told us three times, it's written in the Shastra. Are you sure you want to go? Yes, I want to go. Are you sure? Yes. Are you really, really sure? Yes. Alright. So, then we covered that this body is actually our prison suit. This material world is the prison house. And the prison bars are material desire. The desire to enjoy independence from Krishna. So, if we are very envious or antagonistic or rebels, if we are rebels, the camp of the rebels, then God looks like it. You know. And when someone becomes baffled to enjoy through his ego, they become impersonalists and they think, I am it. You know, in fact, in Cape Town, I met one guy and I asked him, what's your name? And he said, my name is It. He was walking with one stick on the street, you know, and he was dressed like a sadhu. So I said to him, you know, what's your name? He said, my name is It. A few years later, I met him. I asked him, what's your name? He said, my name is Love. Going through it. But then he went through some difficulties and I met him recently and I said to him, what's your name? He said, my name's Oliver. just speculating. So we have to get real knowledge by Guru. We have to get real knowledge by Guru. We have to be sheltered by Guru. Otherwise, we will not be able to understand Krishna. You can only understand God through the pure servant of God, Prabhupada, or his representatives. Otherwise, it's very confusing. Because for the scientists, the biggest challenge to religious doctrine or perspective is that there is evil in this world. You see, they say if there was God, there wouldn't have been any evil, because God would have made the world nice for us. But they are failing to see the point that the evil stems from our separation from God. And in fact, there is no evil, but we experience the evil because we have separated ourselves from God. And in fact, we are the cause of that evil. Now a lot of people are, Hare Krishna, Vijay Prabhu, he's come to bless us. His grace Vijay Prabhu ki.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are now angry with the leadership of the world. They're angry with governments and this and that, but they don't realize they themselves are the people who are empowering such weak governments, misguided governments. You know. So basically, what's the point of being angry if you yourself have instituted that by your own low consciousness? So rather change yourself. That is the perspective of the Bhagavatam. Work on yourself. Develop your awareness of God beyond the it, or beyond you thinking that you're God or something like that. Beyond this material conception, and try to understand how Krishna, or how the source is a person. He's a very loving, very kind, very compassionate person, unlimitedly. And try to revive that original love and relationship that was lost and turn into self-centeredness in this world today. Now we love our body. We will do anything for the body. If the body says, I want to drink, we go immediately. If the body says, I want to eat, we go. If the body says, I want to sleep, we go. We completely surrendered to this body. But that is not our real master, the body. So Krishna's teachings to Arjuna were explaining that you are not this body. The real master is the Supreme Lord, and that Supreme Lord happened to be me, you know. So if you just surrender to me rather than surrender into your body or mind, if you become mindful of my desire, then you will become connected to the spiritual energy, the energy of love, the energy of compassion, care, devotion, being a well-wisher of everyone. That is what Krishna provides. So the difference between material and spiritual education is like that. Material education means that there is no God, or if there is God, he should be just worshipped in the churches, and we've got no business with that in the education. Material education means we are the most evolved beings, the human beings, therefore everything should circumambulate around us. Everything should be centered on us. Man-centric society. That is the idea of material education. We are the boss. We can call the shots, the men, the human beings. That is the whole idea of materialistic society. But the spiritual society is that Krishna is the center. And now Krishna says that spiritual education means the knowledge of matter, spirit, and the controller of both. So when we come to these classes in our ISKCON institution, Srila Prabhupada, we get to understand what is the difference between matter, what is the difference between spirit, and who controls them both. And then we can make a proper choice of yoga to connect, relate through bhakti, devotion to the Lord, to the source of everything, with obedience. Obedience is really the characteristic of a Vaishnava. In the material world, the more disobedient we are, towards the material world, we try to rebel against nature. That is considered intelligent. You know, like our whole scientific movement is how to be disobedient towards the fluctuations of the material energy. We are trying to see how to capture the material energy like capturing a horse, you know, how to capture that horse and tame it. They think we can, through advancement of education, we can tame the material energy. So it's all about manipulation and control. But in devotional service, it's all about obedience to Krishna ultimately, not to the material energy. But the paradox is that although they try to control the material energy, they become obedient to it. But although the devotee tries to become obedient, he becomes free from the material energy. And then he becomes free of lust, greed, exploitation, free of offensive mentality, and one comes to the platform of pure goodness. So I'll read you here something from second canto and I'll conclude and take some questions. It's a beautiful verse that I found today. The devotee thus surpassing the gross and subtle forms of coverings enters the plane of egoism, and in that status emerges the material modes of nature, ignorance and passion. In this point of neutralization, and thus reaches egoism in goodness. After this, all egoism is merged in the Mahatattva, and it comes to the point of pure self-realization. So in this verse here, Lord Brahma is explaining about the Lord in the heart. When we come in contact with Krishna, we move through the different modes, we come to the mode of goodness by practicing devotional service. But in the mode of goodness, there is still some egoism. That selfishness, that sense of my own kind of benefit, my own purpose, my own interest is still there in the quality of goodness. Now, this is the precious thing of ISKCON, Krishna consciousness, Srimad Bhagavatam, is that it lifts us up beyond all materialism to complete obedience and connecting with the source of everything, which is Lord Krishna. There was one beautiful example given in the third canto. Was it the third canto? No, it's in the 11th canto. One purport. I think Hridayananda Goswami Maharaj has written a very beautiful example of this transition from the modes. And then he says, when someone comes to the mode of goodness, the mode of goodness is like an airport. If you want to go to India from Melbourne, you have to go to Melbourne Airport, right? That is the best place to be if you want to go to India from the whole Melbourne city, right? So if you go to the airport, you can go on the plane and you can go to India. That is the mode of goodness. From the mode of goodness, you can connect with Krishna, with God. But he said, if you go to the airport and if you get talking, chatting with someone and you miss your plane, then the airport is not any good than any other place in Melbourne, because you still couldn't go to India. So whether you are here somewhere by the beach, St. Kilda, or the airport is the same, because you couldn't go to India. In other words, we should not get stuck even in the mode of goodness. Sometimes we think devotion or religion is just to be good and get some material benefits. We should move even beyond that to complete obedience and be mindful of our position of servant, of the servant, of the servant of Krishna. And in that way there can be transformation of our own heart, individual, then collective impact will be there. And then when the more people have this consciousness of servant, of the servant, of the servant, the more we can transform this world, make it more conducive for bhakti, for more people to become members of devotional communities, and gradually all of us, we can become eligible to return back to the original world. where there is no birth, disease, old age and death with Krishna. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Grand Purakshana Bhagavatam ki. Lord Brahmanandi. Any comments, questions? Yes, Prabhu.
In later verses you said that Pandava was left by themselves, leaving Drupadi. So how is that dangerous? They left out company of the enemies.
How they left the wife behind? Can't remember. Vijayan Prabhu, do you remember? He's asking why the Pandavas left Drupadi when they went to the forest, went to Himalayas to retire.
Draupadi followed them.
You see? Yeah, I also thought that, but I was not sure. So, let us try to understand the process of Krishna consciousness is about transforming the heart. And we have to go all the way. We don't have to get stuck in the mode of goodness. We have to become pure devotees of Krishna. And we have to help others become free from that slavery of the senses. Because the real slavery is being slave of the senses. The senses are the real slave masters. And the external slave masters are simply representation of our own illusions, of our own spiritual weakness. We empower such slave masters to control us, to do things that we don't want to do, and we suffer in that way. So it is our own lack of proper education, actually, of Krishna. Who is Krishna? Who we are? And what is our position in the world? So in that way we can benefit from this Krishna consciousness movement. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna. 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 Hare Krishna.